It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Hey, did you see those stunning photos of the black hole, something predicted by Einstein in the last century? Just amazing to look at. I sometimes think that Washington is a black hole for civil debate. I was also glad to see over the weekend Mitch McConnell and some fellow Republicans visiting Volodymyr Zelensky in Ukraine, showing the strong bipartisan support here in the U.S. of A. For Ukraine in that awful war. And the latest numbers on this mini surge, I guess you could call it, or it's kind of resembling a real surge of the coronavirus variant, over 90,000 new cases a day. That is more than triple on average what it was just a couple of months ago, which is why it just seems like half the people I know have been getting it. Hey, I want to begin story number one with the awful, tragic, heinous shooting in the Buffalo supermarket that left 10 people dead. This was pure evil, an act of unmitigated racism. An 18-year-old white guy who deliberately set out to go into a black neighborhood and kill as many black people as he could. Most of those who were shot were black. He is not only a racist, and I'm not even going to mention his name, as I don't in any of these mass shooting cases, because it seems like most of these people, in addition to being completely and totally off their rockers, crave attention. And you don't have to guess. In this case, the guy was actually trying to live stream this massacre, which he thought he was going to end up killing himself, but ended up surrendering to police. So not only is he a despicable racist, but he's an anti-Semite because he posted this 180-page manifesto, the alleged suspect now in custody. Again, I'm not going to mention his name. Talking about, at great length, replacement theory. And as the New York Times piece puts it today, you know, this had been confined to, you know, some of the darker corners of Reddit or obscure white nationalist sites. But now the Times at least claims it's gone mainstream. And it refers to, and it's nothing, I mean, it's complete and totally a invented conspiracy theory, future of America, which white people are no longer the numerical majority. That's become a potent force in conservative media and politics, where the theory has been borrowed and remixed to attract audiences, retweets, and I guess get some ratings and donations as well. Well, you know, you got to separate it from the fact that, I mean, I remember reading 20, 30 years ago that America would ultimately no longer be a white majority country because of birth rates among Hispanics, Asians, and declining white birth rates. And, you know, the question of how many immigrants to let in is a legitimate debate for a country. But this replacement theory is bonkers, that it's a deliberate conspiracy led by Jews in order to make sure that more and more immigrants come into the country and thereby increase their political clout at the expense of white America. Unfortunately, if you look at some of these recent shootings, a Pittsburgh synagogue, that was awful, in 2018, a guy with a history of anti-Semitic internet posts was blaming Jews for allowing immigrant invaders into the U.S. There was another white man, the El Paso Walmart, 23 people dead. That was in 2019. Talked about the Hispanic invasion of Texas. So this is something that runs throughout. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Media Buzz yesterday. I hope you got a chance to see the show, because I got some flack online. It's like, well, why? You don't think this story is important. Why didn't you talk about it? And Fox doesn't want to talk about it. And Fox wouldn't let you talk about it. And none of that is true. Here's what actually happened behind the scenes. You know, so this happens late Saturday afternoon. I'm short-staffed coming in Sunday, and I'm told that there's going to be a news conference by authorities in Buffalo, where I went to college, and so I feel a special connection to the Buffalo area. And so obviously I would lose a chunk of my show. And, you know, you go to a lot of trouble to book guests on important subjects, talking about abortion, baby formula shortage, Elon Musk, and other things. So I was trying to figure out what parts I could save. But then the news conference never happened during that hour. So there was that, but there was also a couple of other things. One is, you know, the media coverage at that point was mostly reactive. Who was this person? How many people had died? How many had gone to the hospital? I hadn't had a full chance to think through what I wanted to say about it. You know, Fox was covering this every hour. So I felt like, you know, again, you're making these decisions on the fly because I thought there'd be a news conference. What could I bring to the coverage that would be different from what viewers were getting every other hour? And then there's also this instinct that I have, and I do think it's important to talk about. This is the worst racial attack in America in a long time, and the highest number of victims, I believe, in 2022. So, of course, this story has to be covered as a news story, given the unbelievably racist and anti-Semitic nature of the attack, the number of victims, and all of that. And at the same time, I have this instinct that I've had with a lot of these mass shootings, and there are so many now that it becomes just hard to remember them. Remember the Brooklyn subway shooting? That seems like a long time ago. And the coverage tends to last 2 or 3 days and everybody moves on. Just yesterday, there was a shooting in a California church. One person killed, 4 people wounded. Just right after the horrible incident in Buffalo. But, you know, how much attention do we want to lavish on people with these crazy, nutty, evil, absolutely horrifying conspiracy theories? Aren't you, in a way, playing into their hands if you spread it? But I do think, you know, because of the details of this case and the idea that this so-called replacement theory is getting more attention, it is worth talking about now that I've had a chance to think about it and process it. And by the way, you know, what happens in these cases, and this just drives me absolutely crazy, there's a mass shooting, and people on both sides, by which I mean conservative, liberal, kind of hold their breath. Okay, well, what are the views of this person? And if it turns out that somebody is racist and anti-Semitic, well, then one side can go to town on that. And if it turns out that the person is a liberal is a conservative who hates liberals, as in the Virginia baseball practice congressional shooting several years ago, and so it becomes like, well, he watched Rachel Maddow, so, you know, this, it must be her fault. And so now you have like certain people saying, and it's in this Times article, you know, well, replacement theory has been talked about on Fox, therefore, you know, Fox is to blame. Fox made him do it. But then in the 27th paragraph, it says, well, there's no indication that he even watched Fox, which in turn reminds me of the terrible shooting in Arizona that wounded then Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, ended up taking the lives of 6 people, I believe, in addition to wounding others. And that got blamed on Sarah Palin because Sarah Palin had put out this map with crosshairs, a political map. And it turned out the guy had never seen it. He was mentally ill. So I just, you know, I don't want to get sucked into this game of saying, okay, it's the fault of this media organization or these people because they shared the same philosophy. And by the way, you know, replacement theory, I can't repeat it often enough, is a conspiracy theory. Now, then you get into this question of, well, how did this person get the gun and were there any warning signs? So he was in high school last year. And he said, when asked what you wanted to do in the future, that he wanted to commit a murder-suicide. So the first part of this is exactly as you would hope authorities would respond. State police came to investigate, took him into custody under a state mental health law. This is according to police officials speaking yesterday. He had a psychiatric evaluation in a hospital, but was released in a couple of days. Then he graduated. He fell off the radar. I mean, New York State has a red flag law under which somebody can be, who is found to be a danger to others, potential danger, can be forced to surrender their guns. But, and, you know, now they go and interview former classmates who said, you know, he exhibited bizarre behavior. But is that enough to hold him on when he hasn't threatened a specific person, even though he may be a weird and maladjusted guy? So by the time he goes into a gun store and legally buys a Bushmaster semi-automatic rifle, it's a legal purchase. There's no basis, there's no database on which the owner of the shop who has been interviewed could have stopped him. And then he modified the gun in ways that are potentially illegal so they could hold more ammunition. So that's sort of where we are on this. And I just think, first of all, it just breaks my heart. And every one of these breaks my heart. I mean, just all of these victims, all of these families left grieving, and the way in which, it used to be you knew everyone. You could rattle off Columbine, Virginia Tech, the early ones that got, would just convulse the country for weeks and months. And now it's like, oh, another shooting. And, and then we all move on. And by the way, in this endless manifesto, the alleged shooter specifically says that he was modeling what he planned to do on a guy who in 2019 in Christchurch, New Zealand, killed, I think, about 50 people in a mosque. Well, he thought this was great. He was bored during the pandemic. He started going on 4chan and 8chan and reading all the conspiratorial stuff. So I do think that is worth exploring, and I do think it is the responsibility of the media to point out, this form of hatred and how it is spreading. I do think that's a debate worth having. But ultimately, anybody, I'm thinking now about the Las Vegas shooter. I don't know that we ever determined his motive, in that hotel. We just randomly shot dozens and dozens of people. You get all these differing motivations and agendas. But ultimately, to walk into a supermarket or a movie theater or a hotel or a school and start opening fire, you have to be seriously sick. You have to be twisted. You have to be unbalanced. And I think it's important to know the facts and to combat misinformation, disinformation, evil information, like this so-called replacement theory, anti-Semitic information, racist information that go on and on and on. But at the same time, we don't want to play into the hands of these evil people by giving a platform to these crazy views.
Hey, let's pause right there. The Buzz Meter continues right after this.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
All right, story number two. So President Biden has gotten a lot of media attention, which is not always the case, by the way, for using this phrase, ultra MAGA, as in make America great again. And the other day he said, let me tell you about this ultra MAGA agenda. It's extreme, as most MAGA things are. And then he's used it day after day, attacking the Republican Party as MAGA and ultra MAGA, and even dismissing the former guy, as he likes to call him, as the great MAGA king. Well, of course, Donald Trump loves this. He's happy. He probably ordered a crown, great MAGA king. And according to the Washington Post, privately mocking the Democrats for not being good at branding. And it does remind me of when Hillary Clinton, in what was a pretty bad slip during the 2016 campaign, referred to the basket of deplorables, which, of course, then there were all these deplorable T-shirts written up. Everybody who supported Donald Trump in that first campaign proudly declared themselves to be deplorable. Well, Biden didn't just wake up one day and decide this would be a cool thing to say. I mean, Jen Psaki was asked about it. She said, well, by putting ultra, he just wanted to give it a little extra pop. And that he did. It actually, according to this Washington Post piece, comes from a six-month research project to find the best way to go after the GOP. Who's in charge of that? Anita Dunn, who had been a Biden White House official, left and has been an outside advisor and is now coming back to the White House as we get ready for the midterm stretch, and the Liberal Center for American Progress Action Fund. And there were polling and focus groups, and the pollsters found that MAGA was already viewed negatively by voters, more negatively than Trump Republicans. And so, in these battleground states, more than twice as many voters said they would be less likely to vote for someone called a MAGA Republican than said they would be more likely. Now, obviously, that depends on your party registration, your views of Donald Trump, and on and on and on. And so it's an attempt by Biden and the Democrats who, look, you know, can obviously point to the infrastructure bill and millions of jobs created and all of that, but also have to deal with inflation and the war and now baby formula. More to say about that in a couple of moments. And to paint the Republican Party as being extreme. So it's being used as an epithet. And I love the fact that it's a 6-month research project, and yet it's portrayed as, well, you know, Biden woke up one day and thought this would be pretty cool. You know, look, do Republicans, independent candidates, Green Party candidates, vegetarian candidates, do they use pollsters and speechwriters and focus groups? Yeah, everybody in politics does it. And I'm not saying there's anything misleading about it. I mean, you certainly could argue, what does it mean? Ultra MAGA Republicans. And then you get the fill in the blank. And I think in this current environment, a lot of the blank is going to be about abortion rights and what now everybody expects, although we don't know for sure, the coming 5-4 Supreme Court ruling knocking down Roe v. Wade. So I think we'll hear a lot more about that. But, you know, at some point, politics is always who you're going to pick among two different sides. So the problem that Joe Biden and the Dems have is Donald Trump is not on the ballot yet this year. Now, is he on the ballot in a different way? And that most of the Republicans who are running, not all, are, you know, basically backing his view of conservative populism? Yeah. So they want to make him the issue. But unlike in 2020, 2016, and possibly 2024, he's not a candidate for anything, although clearly pulling a lot of strings behind the scenes. Which brings me to story number three. Now, there have been a lot of interesting state and local races in these midterms. I don't get a chance to talk about all of them, but I am utterly fascinated by what's going on in Pennsylvania and the upcoming Republican primary for the Senate. Just to set the players, you have Dr. Oz. Everybody knows Dr. Oz, Mehmet Oz, the television doctor, who Donald Trump has endorsed. And, you know, there's been a lot of criticism of Oz for not even being in the state that long. Also for some of the, let's just say, less than scientifically or medically proven remedies he has championed over the years. Then you have a more sort of traditional Republican, David McCormick, who runs a huge hedge fund. And then you have this woman who wasn't really on anybody's radar, African-American woman named Kathy Barnett. She ran for Congress a couple years ago, got clobbered. And suddenly you could see it. You could see the GOP freaking out about her because she's moving up in the polls, the latest tracking poll I saw. And, you know, in a primary, it's all turnout and the polls could be wrong. She had actually inched ahead by at least a couple of points of Dr. Oz. So Trump, not wanting to protect his guy, Oz, put out a statement a couple days ago saying Barnett will never be able to win the general election against the radical left Democrats. And then he went on to say, yeah, but she'll have a great future in the Republican Party some other time, but basically she can't win. And the reason that Trump says that, and the reason many in the GOP establishment say that, is because she has a history of saying inflammatory things, of saying things that are anti-Islam, of saying things that appear to be anti-gay. And obviously, there's a lot to answer for, but she also has this incredibly compelling story. She's an author. She's a homeschooling mom. She has said she was born in southern Alabama to a 12-year-old mother who was raped. So she's sort of a living, breathing argument against abortion because had abortion had this teenage mom, according to her telling Chosen, to abort her fetus, then there would be no Kathy Barnett. She was raised in poverty. She joined the Army National Guard. So she has quite a colorful history. It's a Fox poll, the latest one I've seen, showing Oz with 22. Let's see. McCormick with 20 and Barnett with 19. But I've since seen another poll that had Barnett out by a couple points. Again, you're in margin of error territory here. So Kathy Barnett was actually on Fox News Sunday yesterday. She was pressed about her history of inflammatory statements and also questions about her resume. And to some extent, she ducked. She said, well, it's all on my website. You can go see. Was she actually a professor at such and such a college? Other areas, she said, look, some of these tweets are many years old. She didn't apologize for them. She said that's the best they can find on me. And there's something very appealing about her, but A super PAC backing Oz calls her crazy Kathy Barnett, Pennsylvania's wackiest Senate candidate. Look, she is exactly the kind of person who might win the Republican primary and would have a lot of trouble in a general election. Rick Grenell, who became acting director of national intelligence, former ambassador to Germany under Trump, pointed to some old tweets suggesting that she's homophobic, unfit for office. So it's an interesting one to watch, and interesting the way she chose not to take. Here's the most interesting thing of the whole race. She said, and I think a lot of other Republicans who aren't necessarily full MAGA might follow this path, especially if she's successful. MAGA does not belong to President Trump. MAGA, although he coined the word, it actually belongs to the people. Our values never, never shifted to President Trump's values. So what she's saying is, look, I believe in all the things that Trump believes in, but I don't necessarily vouch for all the things he has said and done. And it's our slogan. And if she can appropriate that, whether it's in this campaign or another, that might be a way of kind of threading the needle. All right, let me get to story number four, because I am just apoplectic about this baby formula shortage. What I said on Media Buzz yesterday was, yes, you can absolutely say that how is it that for all the warning signs, remember this started back in February when the largest of the four U.S. manufacturers, Abbott, had a contamination at a plant. The plant had to be shut down. There was a recall. The plant has still not been reopened. And Abbott produces so much of the American market's baby formula that this created a huge problem. And I said, okay, so the Biden White House, President Biden didn't even talk about this until a few days ago. So it looks like they're playing catch up behind the curve. But where were the media? And I said, you know, you oftentimes you go back and you look that somebody had it and nobody followed it. And that's the case here. So between, you know, everybody did like one obligatory story on the shutdown of that factory back in February. And then, of course, you have the last week or so when, you know, what, 43% shortage of baby formula. You think about this, and I think about when my kids needed formula. I mean, you don't have a lot of choices. They can't eat solid food. Many women, for whatever reason, can't breastfeed, don't have time to breastfeed, have problems breastfeeding. They're, you know, I hate to say it's a life and death matter, but, you know, women are trying to find friends in other states, other cities. Do you have any? Do you know where I can get some? It is an absolute catastrophe. So I found a Washington Post story, ran on page 15. In mid-April, and there was a similar story in the Wall Street Journal a couple days earlier. The Washington Post story said that shortage of baby formula, some stores rationing. Now, if I'm in any newsroom in America, and I see that story, and it actually cited specifics that Walmart and Target were limiting purchases of baby formula because of this shortage. Why did every news organization in America not jump on that the next day, the next 2 days? Why? I cannot figure it out. What more would you need? Baby formula, shortage, big retailers. A lot of moms knew about this. A lot of moms knew that they were having more and more trouble. But of course, they all thought, well, it's just my area. Or maybe it's this brand. And I don't know that it's a nationwide story. And no follow-up until now everybody's talking about it. So here's an interesting piece in Reason magazine, which talks about one of the reasons there are only four major companies, which, you know, if they're making plenty of formula, then that's great. But foreign imports have been severely restricted, and not solely for safety reasons. For one thing, they're subject to tariff rate quotas of 17.5%. So that means the tariffs are set so high that it essentially block American stores or retailers from importing more from other countries because it becomes unprofitable and you have to pay that tariff. Here's an example. Last year from Reason, FDA forced the recall of approximately 76,000 units of infant formula manufactured in Germany. The formula wasn't a health or a safety risk to babies. It just didn't meet the labeling standards. Okay, what were the labeling standards? The products were banned for not informing parents that they contained less than 1 milligram of iron per 100 calories. And there are other examples of this being blocked from countries like Germany and the Netherlands that are widely sold, legally sold, widely used in Europe and around the world. So that formula is good enough for the rest of the world, but we can't import it here. I mean, they're trying to loosen that now. But why? Probably because lobbyists got some law passed to limit the imports as car manufacturers used to do with Japanese cars back in the old days, so that they could reap more of the profits. I mean, this is outrageous. It is absolutely outrageous. And so there have been these warning signs, and people who are defending the Biden White House say, well, you know, they're working behind the scenes with the FDA, but why wait so long to go public? It does give the sense. It reminds me of when, admittedly, President Biden was slow to get the home testing kits out at a time when everybody, you know, there was a huge surge that was utterly predictable in coronavirus, and everybody wanted a home test, and people had to go. And I remember I've told this story before, standing out in front of the public library, freezing cold for an hour, people in wheelchairs, they were all elderly people, you know, just trying to get two packets of tests. Now everybody can get a test, but at the time it was behind. And also there's the new, under Trump, negotiated U.S.-Mexico-Canada free trade agreement, which, by the way, limits how much baby formula Canada can export, not just to the U.S., but around the world. So we could conceivably get some of this stuff from Canada, but we can't because of this trade agreement. If all this makes no sense to you, welcome to the club.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
So let's move on to number five. There's been so much intense media coverage, of course, about the leak to Politico of the Samuel Alito draft opinion, in which five conservative justices, at least for that moment in February, signed on to overturning Roe v. Wade. Now, we don't know we do know from some additional reporting there aren't other drafts circulating. We haven't heard of any other of the five conservative justices changing their mind. It's not definite, but it certainly looks likely that probably at the end of next month, early July, Supreme Court will return abortion to the states. So Clarence Thomas was at a conference over the weekend in Dallas, and he had a lot to say. And I want to quote it because you don't hear from Clarence Thomas all that much. And he's upset about the leak. And he says, what happened at the court is tremendously bad. I wonder how long we're going to have these institutions at the rate we're undermining them. He goes on to say that that this would leak while the justices and their clerks were doing the usual thing, which is trading drafts and making suggestions and trying to reach a consensus opinion that the most justices possible could sign on to, was kind of like an infidelity. Look at where we are, where that trust or that belief is gone forever, says Justice Thomas. And when you lose that trust, especially in the institution that I'm in, it changes the institution fundamentally. You begin to look over your shoulder. Now, this is not that different from what a lot of media people are saying, a lot of court watchers are saying. He talked about the old days when he felt it was more of a family, even though it might have been kind of a dysfunctional family. You would never. And then he went on to talk about the protest, which is also part of our lead yesterday on Media Buzz. Says Thomas, you would never visit Supreme Court justices' houses when things didn't go our way. We didn't throw temper tantrums. It is incumbent on us to always act appropriately and not to repay tit for tat. He said, and then this would be subject to some dispute, conservatives have never trashed a Supreme Court nominee. He did acknowledge, and he had to acknowledge because it's part of the historical record, that Merrick Garland, who was President Obama's third Supreme Court nominee, didn't get a hearing, but he was not trashed. Okay, I don't know that that's much better than not being trashed, not even being able to get a hearing when there were, what, like 9 months left in Obama's term? And, you know, a lot of Democrats think the Republicans stole that seat. And, of course, this whole, well, we can't possibly do this in the last year, then they turn around with all kinds of, you know, self-serving and unconvincing explanations. And with 3 weeks until the election, put Amy Coney Barrett on the high court, a seat that would have been filled by Garland if he got a vote. Maybe he would have been turned down, but I always felt, you know, have the hearing, give the reasons you're voting against him, let the constitutional process work. But obviously, people have long memories. So he says, oh, we didn't trash Merrick Garland, we just blew him off, you know? And in a brief reference to what he went through when his hearings were famously reopened in 1991, when George H.W. Bush nominated him. And I knew Clarence Thomas because I had interviewed him when the job he had before that was as the chairman of the EEOC. And he said that kind of opposition was also used, quote, by those people who were trying to keep me off the court over abortion. That wasn't the stated reason, of course, but I'm not going to quarrel with his reasoning. Now, I can immediately see, hear, sense lots of people say, who was Clarence Thomas to talk when his wife, Ginny, a conservative activist, you know, we now know from audio tapes and texts and so forth, was part of the effort to try to overturn the 2020 election in Donald Trump's behalf. And she was in touch with some of the wilder legal nominees, people who were purporting to give advice, advice that turned out to be crazy, that turned out to be too crazy for Rudy Giuliani, that even turned out to be too crazy for Donald Trump. But that brings me back to this. I mean, I understand people making that argument. If Clarence Thomas is going to say trust in institutions is fading, what about the role of his wife, who certainly, you know, the whole big lie argument that Trump continues to make day after day, has certainly contributed to an undermining of confidence in the Electoral College system, in the voting rights system. And, you know, you have a country now that is just completely and totally divided. A lot of Republicans agree with Donald Trump. The election was stolen. It was rigged. I can sit here and talk till I'm blue in the face. All these lawsuits, federal, state, Bill Barr, Justice Department probe, no evidence found, no widespread evidence of fraud. And people who support and admire Donald Trump will come back and say, no, no, the big lie is what happened that Joe Biden won the election. And there was that effort in Pennsylvania, which Biden won by 80,000 votes, to get Republican state reps, this is the John Eastman memo, to ignore the Biden delegates and recognize the alternate slate of Trump electors. And then in that memo, he said this would provide cover, which I think gave up the game. In any event, that's Clarence Thomas's view on this. This is going to be a major issue. I still think when you come down to it, and there was a poll I saw that the Democrats now getting a lot more energized about voting for midterms. They often stay home during midterms. Republicans were already energized, and they're still, I think, at a greater level of enthusiasm, but ahead of the Democrats. But the Democrats are certainly more engaged because abortion is no longer an abstract issue. It is very, very real because of this huge fight over Roe. And so it seems to me that it's going to be an issue, but when you compare it to $5 plus gasoline, I just drove by the gas station. When you compare it to the war in Ukraine, when you compare it to baby formula, when you compare it to all kinds of shortages, when you compare it to COVID, which has come back in a kind of a mini surge, there's a lot more things, I think, that affect people's lives. Now, if you are a woman or a man, I hate for this to be called a woman's issue. The dads have a stake in abortion rights, too. And look, I see very, very passionate, strong feelings on both sides of this very difficult moral issue. Difficult for Joe Biden because he's a Catholic. In any event, I do think the visibility has gone way, way up. But you do have these other issues, which you might call kitchen table issues, that may prove on election day to be more decisive. But we shall see. Thank you, as always, for listening. Hope you had a great weekend. If you missed Media Buzz, the segments are now online. We'll see you tomorrow with more Buzz Meter.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.